The promises countries have made to reduce CO2 emissions are nowhere near enough to prevent a climate catastrophe, and the window for action is closing. A new United Nations report shows the Earth is on a path to warm 2.8 degrees Celsius by the end of the century, and only a complete system-wide transformation will lower the temperature. Joining us now is Inger Andersen, who is the executive director of the UN Environment Program. Inger, thanks so much for being here.
Oh, it's my pleasure to be here.
So reading this report is upsetting, but I have to say that's true of nearly every climate report that has come out over the past decade. Slowing down climate change begins to seem impossible. COP27, the United Nations Climate Change Conference that comes up in November, will probably have to deal with some very sobering news. What kind of action needs to be taken at this point?
No, I mean, you're absolutely right. It is sobering news, and every report that has come out has come with quite stark numbers, and that's no different here. We're heading right now to a 2.8 degree world, and we can take some actions that we've promised, and we think we've made a big dent, but we've actually only then we will arrive at 2.6 degree world by 2100. So there is a long way to go. What has to happen is systems shift. So what does that really mean? Well, it means that in the electricity sector, which accounts for nearly half at 42% of all energy-related emissions, we need to shift that to zero carbon power. We need to get to an increase of renewable in the energy sector. And I'm speaking globally, of course. And the transport sector, similarly so, that's the second largest source of energy-related CO2 emissions. And here we need to ensure that we invest in e-vehicles and, of course, that we invest in public transport as well. Similarly, for building sector, you know, this is an obvious one and just one for the picking. And it's so frustrating that countries haven't done that yet, because let's think about it. We're already regulating for earthquakes and fires and so on. Why can't we regulate for energy intensity? And then there are the food systems where we need to be sure that we have lesser emissions from organic, rotting food, and of course, industry itself. So these are the areas. But let's think about it this way. Doing these actions will create great economic growth. And so we just need to reach for it and not be beholden to the past.
Well, since you brought up the economy, the global financial system, it appears, is a big part of the problem. Last year, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres said our financial system was fueling environmental destruction. Let's take a listen.
When you destroy a forest, you are creating GDP, according to the statistics. When you overfish, you are increasing your GDP, according to the statistics. When you destroy the planet, you are, in the statistics, you are showing an increase of GDP. So even that needs to be changed.
So explain how that might work. I mean, that's when you talk about transformation, changing the way we define economic success is a massive shift.
Yes, it is. But we understand that short-term profits drive growth, but we're not taking into account how that is in a way sawing over the very branch on which we are sitting, because what we want is vibrant ecosystems that can actually deliver harvests and food. What we want is vibrant fisheries where we don't fish the oceans empty. And what we want is obviously forests that are vibrant, deliver timber and products that we need, but not at the expense of being carbon sinks. And so rethinking GDP and rethinking nature as an asset class, just like we consider labor an asset class, these are the kind of things that we need to rethink. And I will say that already some banks in some countries and some central bank regulators have begun to deal with this and understand that a banking sector that has invested heavily in hydrocarbon is not a safe banking sector. And so doing these health checks and stress tests on our banks and on our financial system so that we do not enter into a climate-related financial crisis 20 years from now, when we see that these assets are no longer producing the value that we thought they would.
How do you deal, as the United Nations, how do you deal with the inequity of not only which nations are producing the most emissions, including the United States, and which nations are doing the most to cut back on emissions and take actions to fight climate change?
It is a clear issue of inequity and climate injustice. the 20 largest economies are responsible for 75% of global emissions. And so if these 20 economies lean in and do the right thing, actually, we are a long, long way towards the solution.
Last question for you. Many of us are already noticing and becoming concerned because we can see the effects of climate change. But I wonder if you could just explain what it means if the planet were to warm 2.8 degrees by the end of the century. What would that look like?
It's actually a future that's very hard to fathom, but it would mean that the kind of wildfires, the kind of droughts, the kind of inundations, the ferocity of the storms that we have been seeing will be greater, more frequent, and with greater intensity and damage. People will have to move from low-lying areas. Property would no longer have value in a number of places. And we will see at the global scale significant people movement, climate migrants, climate refugees. And some places would become uninhabitable. And so it is a sort of apocalyptic future that I'm painting here, and not one that I would wish our grandchildren to go into.
Inger Andersen is the executive director of the UN Environment Program. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.